Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this, well, this is all ball, all basketball all the time. And we're just like everybody else. We're catching our breath after an unbelievable national semifinal, right? That Baylor-Houston. I'm kidding. Baylor-Houston sucked. Here's the one thing about Baylor-Houston that you should recognize. We talked about this. You know, can't talk a ton of X and O's on a podcast. It's hard. But we have talked a ton about what's caused some of these teams to get beat. And the difference in Baylor and the discipline it took to come off a ball screen. You see two on the ball, you got one in the lane, and to find the shooter on the weak side almost the entire first half and get open threes. Like, you have no idea how many teams won't do that consistently. One, their guards are too small, or two, they pick up the ball too early. But Baylor's not only good, they're really well coached. Then, of course, you have the UCLA Gonzaga game. It's not the greatest game I've ever seen. Like, we just have this recency bias. It was a great game. Both teams played well. The offense was unbelievable. You know, it's like, did we not remember Virginia Auburn, you know, or Virginia Purdue, if you want, you know, shot making or whatever. That was an overtime game, but it was a very close game. It was hard fought. UCLA was awesome. I thought it was a good call for a charge at the end of regulation. And look, if you're going to nitpick UCLA, one of the things that we did when I was at Notre Dame, and I haven't seen it done anywhere else, was it's called choke the point guard. Ball goes to the bucket, and the center, the big guy, would deny the point guard the ball just for a second or two. That combined with finding a way to corral Jalen Suggs, obviously could have, you know, won you the basketball game. Instead, you lose and you go home. Actually would have tied, sent it to double overtime. But it was a great game. And before we do the old attaboys about, I like not calling timeout, but I also like the way that Jalen Suggs caught the ball going down the floor. Like, how many times have you worked with a guard who just keeps coming back towards the ball, get it going down the floor, your momentum. And it was three dribbles and he was 30 feet from the basket. So it's a great shot. The bank shot probably takes away a little bit from it because there's a little bit more luck involved, even if it is straight, as opposed to Chris Jenkins, which was a called play against the defense. And Roy Williams called, you know, had Bryce Johnson underneath the hoop. That was his man that hit three. So there's a lot to it, but we still had a great game. And it reminds you just how good the sport is, especially at the top, which brings us to Baylor versus Gonzaga. Okay. This is going to be a good podcast. I think you'll enjoy it. You can check out the radio show daily, 3-6 Eastern, 12-3 Pacific on iHeartRadio app, foxsportsradio.com, or wherever you ever download podcasts. It's always available. Of course, this one's all ball. We tell stories. We have backgrounds. You go back through. I got one with Scott Drew. I got one with Roger Powell, who's going to join us momentarily about his life. I've done a short one with Mark Few, but we'll do another one. If he win or lose, we'll do another one with him this summer, a long one, because he's awesome. So many of these guys you've actually heard on this pod. We'll get Tommy Lloyd. We'll get, you know, Jerome Tang, and a longtime Baylor guy. Obviously, we have previous darling of the NCAA tournament, who, of course, coached Oral Roberts. That pod is available on All Ball as well. So let's dig in with Roger Powell. Roger was a great player at Illinois. He's been assistant coach previous to Gonzaga. He was at Vanderbilt with Bryce Drew, right? So he worked for Bryce Drew. Now he's coaching at Gonzaga against Scott Drew to win a national championship. So there's a lot of ties that bind there. Plus, a lot of people are talking about, hey, this is the most anticipated championship game since Illinois, North Carolina. Well, who would know better than Roger Powell, who played in that game? Let's do this. Let's start with last night, and then we'll go back to 05. Is that cool?
Cool.
Okay. So what were your – I know you didn't have the scouts, so you're not taking the blame for them scoring 90 points on you, right? I'm messing with Tommy. I texted Tommy. I was like, hey, man, you want to do a pod? He's like, I can't. I'm scouting you. So it's crazy. Talk to Roger. Talk to Roger. Anyway, in terms of your guys' prep, how close to how you thought they would play you did they play you?
Well, I mean, we thought they would play us similar, but we didn't realize they would make the shots they made. I mean, Juzang has been shooting lights out, and he made some difficult shots. I mean, they played probably one of their best games, but with that being said, I mean, they've been doing it all tournament, you know? So we knew that they were going to be competitive, and we knew that they were going to pose some problems for us. And I mean, it was just altogether an unbelievable game. And they played, I mean, they played, I think they could have beat anybody in the country the way they played last night, but we just fortunately came out on top.
Was there any similarities in the entire game to how BYU played you in the first half? Like, cause people forget, like, that BYU had 53 in the first half on you guys. And it was like Pleasantville, like the first half of the movie Pleasantville, where just whap, whap, they're making everything. Similar, dissimilar, what do you think?
Similar in the fact that they're making shots and they shot great from the field. But dissimilar in, you know, UCLA was just going one-on-one. You know, they were just, I mean, they were making tough shots. I feel like BYU made shots within what they do, and they were tough shots, but, you know, we had some errors and different things that I think led to some of those makes. Last night, I mean, these guys were just making shots, hand in your face or not. I mean, it didn't matter. You know, they were playing to win that game, and credit to them, man. Those kids showed a lot of toughness.
Okay,
so because we were shooting the ball really well too.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not like, yeah, like people go like, well, UCLA had to play their A game. It was a lot like you guys played a B game, right? You had some foul trouble, but like your dudes played well.
They were 93 to 90. I mean, that's a lot of points scored, you know,
in a college game, and they're not playing with a super fast pace. So okay, so this is what it felt like from my vantage point, but you know a lot more about it. My vantage point felt like, okay, a couple things they're trying to do. Obviously, they were sending four back defensively, right, and trying to really build a wall in transition, which is ironic for how the game ended, whatever, but still they're trying to build a wall in transition. I felt like, especially in the first half, they weren't trying to score early in possessions. It was more late clock. And then it felt like they were trying to, you know, get Drew into as many high ball screens as possible and really, you know, either tire him out or go at him, make him move laterally, tire him out on defense so he doesn't hurt you as bad on offense. What else was I missing about how they played, how UCLA schematically chose to play against you?
You know, I mean, you can think of all the schemes, you can think of all the different strategies. I think at the end of the day, they had a lot of belief in their heart. And I think that they play with that belief, that chip on their shoulder. You can see it in their eyes. And I mean, they've had, I think, three overtime games in the tournament. So, you know, they never give up. They keep coming. And I think Mick has done a great job with instilling that belief in that team. And that's why I think they were in the game. You know, they shot shots with confidence. And they made shots. I mean, that was a team that was coming to win. And just fortunately, you know, we made a great shot. We were able to hang in there. And, you know, all year we've been winning a lot of games by double digits. This was the best game for us to be able to win a close game, overtime game, to be able to, you know, come out with a victory. So my hat's off to them. I think they deserve a lot of praise for the way they competed.
No question. Okay, so halftime, one of the things that I thought helped, there were two runs in the first half. Hold on a quick, switch back to speaker. There are two runs in the first half. Tiger went out, and you guys went on a little run. And then the end of the first half, they had you down five, and then you go up one at halftime. Take me into the locker room, okay, because for people who know how it works, like you get off the court and the coaches meet before Mark and whomever probably has the scout goes and talks to the players, okay? So what was discussed in your little coaches meeting?
You know, we had to do a better job, you know, with communication, not giving them looks, you know, obviously with, you know, some of our schemes and some of the things that we had to focus on in our scouting, we had to pay a lot more attention to it. I think they made some tough shots, but we had some errors that I think led to some of their easy baskets, and we just had to correct them, you know. And I think Coach Few always does a great job of, in a situation like that, I mean, we're in the Final Four. We're playing to go to the national championship. We've done a lot of good things to get to this point. So it's not a matter of our desire and our passion and just, you know, our competitive nature, but it's a matter of just tweaking some things, correcting some small things. And I think that was our discussion with the guys. And I feel like they came out and they did in the second half, but it still didn't work because they were just I mean, they were really good, you know, and any little minor mistake you make or any inch, like they, it was a bucket, you know, and that was our hope that we would kind of limit those, but it just didn't work. That's why we ended up going to overtime and plus possibly a second overtime.
Drew gets his fourth foul. And, you know, in college basketball, anytime somebody sneezes and somebody falls down, it's a charge. So you got to be saying, what we do here. Now, he did draw the charge at the end of regulation. We'll get to in a second, which is huge. Mm-hmm. But what are you guys saying as far as getting him out, leaving him in? What's Mark's general philosophy with playing guys with foul trouble late in a big game?
We tried to do some, you know, offense, defense. I don't know if you noticed towards the end of the game, we subbed him in and subbed him out just to kind of, you know, buy some more time. But when he came out, they think like the second time, he's like, "Coach, leave me in. I'm good." And one of the things that Coach Few does a great job of is, you know, instilling confidence in his players. He's confident that his players are, you know, they're going to be smart. They're going to make good decisions. And he gives it to him. He says, "Hey, are you good? If you're good, if you can do this, we'll keep you in." And I think that's kind of, I think that's what happened. He just kept men and he trusted them. And obviously that was a huge, huge play to take a charge when you have four fouls. But you know, Drew's been good that all year, man. He got there, he got his feet set and he took it. And it won the game for us.
It really did. And then you're like, you want to just tell Juzang like, "Yo, man, you've been hitting pull-ups all tournament." Like, he just pulls up. Or if he has two open on the wing, right? Because he gets by and, oh, man. What is that like as a guy who played in the Final Four to be like you're like helpless, right? Like this is what you want as a coach and you want to help. But at the end of the day, they just got to go play and make plays, right? And you're sitting there, you're watching all of this. End of regulation. What's personally going on in Roger Powell's mind?
You know, I think our preparation is huge. You know, I think Coach alluded to this in one of his interviews. You know, we spend a lot of time working on in-game situations. You know, we do a lot of, you know, a minute left, we're down two, you know, a minute left, we're up two, you know, I mean, 3 minutes and we're down eight. And we practice that, especially with the year we've had. For some reason, we've been winning a lot of these games by double digits and, you know, it's not close in the end.
Do you know this? I don't know if you know this stat. Okay, this is a great one. That was UCLA's 18th out of 29 games. That was a one designed on the last possession. 18th. That was your first. But you can say you guys were inexperienced, and you were maybe collectively as a group, but all of them had. What did you learn? What'd you learn about your guys last night that you thought, but you didn't know until they were facing that sort of adversity?
I mean, when you look at your record and you now we're 31-0 and I mean, obviously we've won a lot of games by double digits, but I mean, there has something to say for these guys that have been able to string these many games together and get to a national championship just, or even a Final Four. You know, my thought is I have all the world of confidence in these players and, you know, they've proven it. I mean, and so with that being said, during the game, I'm just sitting here like, okay, who's going to make the play? You know, who's going to make the play to open this thing up? You know, cause we go five, I think we're up six. When you think, okay, they're going to break. We're going to go on a run like we usually do. It just did not happen. So, but you know, you never lose confidence and you just, you know, just the next play.
So Kispert misses and they come down and Johnny's got the ball. They have no timeouts left. Okay. In terms of preparation, considering when the shot was taken and Kispert's shot was taken, you guys didn't play two for one on it. And they come down. Like, what do you guys have a rule for calling timeout? Do you have a rule for how to play in the game? I assume you're switching all likes. Or what's the general rules in that situation that you guys have established going back to when you practiced in those situations?
I mean, we have different calls, different things, different ways we're going to guard depending on personnel. But you know, at the end of the day, I mean, there's no rule that just can overcome just getting it done, yeah. You know? And I think when you're in that situation, you got to get it done. You got to get it stopped. And unfortunately we didn't get a stop.
Well, you did, you just didn't get the rebound, right?
We didn't get a stop, you know, right. and we offensive rebound, 2 points. It's a bucket, but you know, like I said, we practice time and time again, those situations in practice. So
getting the ball to Jalen quickly in transition, that is how it's practiced.
Yeah, I mean, we practice so many different scenarios. There's no like cookie cutter scenario. They're all different, but our guys had enough confidence. Jalen had enough, basketball IQ that, hey, we got 3.3 seconds, I believe it was left. Get it out quick and just about try to make a shot. Plus we're tied. So the only thing that can happen is us going overtime. So he was smart enough to know that, hey, it's tie game. I'm going to get it. I got 3.3 seconds. I'm not sure exactly how much time left, but it was around
3.8.
3.8.
Maybe 3.3, I'm not sure.
I'm going to go take a shot, you know. And they didn't deny him, and he was able to get the ball in with the running start and made it.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Okay, ball leaves his hands. Did you know? Are you like, that's going in? Or what, like, what's – give me the truth. Give me the truth. Give me deep inside. What are you thinking when they release the ball?
See, deep inside me, I was just sitting there the whole time. Like, when Zhu Zhang scored, I had no expression. I was just like, okay, what's next? 3.3 seconds. Or 3.8 seconds. Okay, what are we going to do? Are we going to get shot off? What was going to happen? And when it left his hands, it happened so fast. Like, I wasn't thinking about, is it going to go in or is it not going to go in? I was just like, okay, this probably is going to go to overtime. You know, how are we going to do an overtime? I'll see my foul trouble. But all that was going through my head, and then it hit the backboard, went in. And then I just jumped up and ran. Like, I almost forgot I was a coach, man. I was so excited, man, for him, because I just – you know, it was such a huge shot for him to make. And he if anybody deserves it, you know, a kid like that, the highest recruit, Gonzaga's history, you know, all the work that he's put in this year, coming here this summer, you know, choosing Gonzaga over other major programs, believing in our program, believing in Coach Few and our staff. And it's like, that kid deserves that moment. And it was amazing. It was special.
You know, everybody talks about being a quarterback. I will point out that, you know, end of regulation, he threw an interception. So his QBR is terrible. It's just terrible. He threw a pick. So, I mean, as good as his arm is, you got to recognize defense and coverage. End of regulation. I see all these quarterback footage of him running. I was a little disappointed with his inability to throw a laser. I'm kidding, of course.
That block and that pass to Drew for the dunk. Like, oh, my goodness.
What a pass!
And he's had passes like that in the year, like those full court bounce passes that are just right on the money. Like he just has a knack for doing that. He's a special player, man.
Okay, there's a bunch of other stuff I want to get to. Okay, so 05, mm-hmm. 05, you guys were nice, right? I mean, you guys are loaded. You got Darren Williams, UD. Luther Head, who is it? Augustine was like your big, right?
James Augustine.
You guys were small ball. That was nice. And you're playing Carolina, who was everybody's pick to win it, right? You guys, this is 1-2. What do you remember?
So I remember not just that game. I mean, I remember leading up to that game because we had a situation. I mean, I know everyone talks about one of the best comebacks of NCAA tournament history. We were down to Arizona, and I just, you know, there was a huge relief for us to make the Final Four because there was all this hype on us. You know, we were 29-0. We lost our last regular season game to Ohio State and ran through the Big Ten tournament. And here we are in the Elite Eight game in Chicago, of all places, in Chicago, the Rosemont Horizon back then where DePaul used to play. And we're down 14 with like 3 minutes to go. And just like, man, this is not the way this is supposed to end, you know, and for us to come back and win that game and then go to the Final Four, we're like, oh, we made the Final Four. Now let's try to go and win a championship. And then Louisville, like, you know, the semifinals, huge game. Like, I probably had one of the best plays I ever had on him. Missed three, tip dunked it. Like, you know, just all those
experiences. What's that feeling like? Like, okay, I was there. Was at the old Edward Jones Dome, right?
Yep.
Miss shot, you get a tip dunk. What? There's all different levels. Like layup lines, I can only imagine how hype you are. Brand new floor, brand new shoes, 70,000 people. You're going crazy. But in a game, what's that feeling like?
Man, it's surreal, man. It's like, you know, in those moments, it's not like you premeditate what you're going to do. Right. You're just playing basketball. And I made a three prior to that. And I was like, okay, if I catch it at the top of the key this time, I'm shooting this because, like, I'm feeling it. And I shot it. When it left my hands, I knew it was going to be short. And you just follow your shot. And as I'm following my shot, I was like, I'm going to go get the rebound. And, like, I just caught it and dunked it. It was like, did this really just happen? And running back on defense, I was just like, wow, this is one of those moments, man. Just, you know, those moments that you experience playing in this level, at a high level in the Final Four, is just like, those are things that you can't plan. It just happens. And it's stuff that just kind of, you know, carved in your mind, just like that shot last night, you know?
Yeah. Is it as intense without the fans?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And we have fans, you know, I mean, yeah, obviously it's not the 70,000 or 6,000, but it's, our fans are going nuts, man. It's still a cool environment. And I think the NCAA has done a great job with the setup and, you know, just, I mean, it feels like a Final Four semifinal game. I mean, it's special.
Okay. So you, of course, work for Bryce and now mm-hmm. you're playing against Scott. So did you have the scout back when you were supposed to play? Like, oh, you know all the Drew stuff. Did you become okay? Did they start plugging you for all the Drew information?
No. I was working on Houston. Like, obviously, if we would have played Houston, I was working on that. I had that with Tommy. I had that kind of locked in, and Tommy was working on Baylor. You know, so that's kind of how we do it. And but with that being said, you know, we all kind of work together. We talk about ideas. And, I mean, these guys, I mean, Coach Few is, I mean, he's him, Tommy, and B. Mike, man, they've been together for a long time. So they know what each other is going to say before they say it, you know. So for me, kind of being here now for this second year, you know, I'm still growing and learning their system and pretty good at it now. But it's just, you know, they got this thing dialed in.
Yeah, they're locked in.
But anyways, like I called Bryce and I was like, FaceTime Bryce. Hey, Bryce, can you send me the scout for Baylor? You know, just because, you know, I know the family, just give them a hard time. But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we were prepared to play him in December. So, you know, we were scouting him then. So, this has been a long game, you know, game coming. It's been a lot of preparation for this game. So, it's going to be fun.
I was impressed, you know, Houston, like a lot of teams, they really loaded up on the ball. They put two on the ball in ball screens and put another guy kind of plugging in the lane. I was really impressed with Baylor doing what you're supposed to do, which is, you know, find that skip pass to the corner. And then in the second half, when they started guarding skip, they started really hitting the roller, either short roll, or long roll, whatever. It's not just that they're talented and they play hard. That's a big part of it. But they also, like, seem to be very coachable. Like, that's a good basketball team. I think that's a little bit what, like, same thing with you guys. Like, people respect the way you guys play and you're coached. And I feel like Baylor is the same way. Is that a fair, having evaluated them and scouting Houston while they're just getting lit up by Baylor, I would guess you had to gain even more respect for
you. Oh, listen, we've watched Baylor a ton. I mean, you know, every time they're on TV, you know, I've watched them. And to be honest, you know, even before this year, you know, with, you know, Scott being there and how close we are to his staff, my family, you know, because I'm really close to Bryce, like, we always watch Baylor. And he does a great job, man. And those guys are locked in. They're a special team, you know. So for America to get two special teams competing in national championship, it's pretty cool turnout. Pretty cool situation.
Especially what
happened last year with the tournament being canceled.
No question. For you personally, because if you remember that, people remember that game, you guys shot 43s. And it was where you guys spread them out. They were so big and strong inside. And you came up just short, right? You had a shot, came up just short. For you personally, what would it mean to take that next step to become a national champion?
Oh my goodness, man. I mean, it's, you know, I am beyond blessed. You know, just being able to play in the Final Four, playing a national championship game. And here I am as a coach, assistant coach, you know, who I on one of the I think one of the greatest teams in college history right now, what we've been doing, what these guys have done is I can't put into words how blessed I am and how grateful I am for this. And if we were to win tomorrow,
yeah,
I mean, it would be extremely special. But with that being said, I mean, what has been done already and, you know, what we've been able to accomplish already is special too, you know, and just winning this and finishing it off with the victory would be the icing on the cake, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Real question. 05 Illinois, 2021 Gonzaga. Play each other. One game. Who wins?
You had to ask me that question, didn't you?
Of course I did.
You know, a lot of people actually ask me that. I think our team was special back then, man. Our team was special.
Just
back
say
then.
In 05.
Yes. But let me tell you this. I would have had an issue with Corey Kispert, man. You know, because I would have had to chase him around.
Okay, so you would have had Kispert. Augustine would have had Timmy.
Drew Timmy's pretty good.
Yeah, Darren Williams and Jalen Suggs that's a pretty good matchup.
That's
right
a
there.
Pretty good matchup. Darren was a really good defender, man. He was special.
Injuries derailed him from being potentially an all time great in the NBA, right? I mean, like he was a great player. All right, so who does D match up with?
So Yai? Either a Yai or Andrew Nembhard. And Andrew has size on him.
He doesn't have that speed that D had. That speed was okay. And then Luther matches up. Luther matches up with who?
Joel. Yeah. So I would guard Corey. Joel would probably guard Luther. You know, D and Andrew Nembhard would guard each other, and Darren and Jalen Suggs, and then James Augustine.
And then who's off the bench for you guys? I'm trying to think. Who's off the bench?
Yeah, Anton Watson, Aaron Cook. You guys bring Aaron Cook
off the bench. It's pretty nice, right?
Yeah. So, that would be a fun game to see, you know?
That would be a fun game. Neither team would have any problem scoring 90 in that game.
No. It'd be some scoring in that game.
Have you seen your family? Because I heard Few talk to Mike Lewis and he was like, yeah, Few saw his family through a gate at the baseball stadium. What about you have a gaggle of children? Have you gotten a chance? You get to see them? Like, how does it work?
Yeah, I probably can't see my kids, man. That fence wouldn't stand a chance. If they see me, they're going to find a way to get across the fence. So I'm just going to wait till after the game. Hopefully we win. Whatever happens, I'm going to get to see them. But, yeah, I can't. Like, I got my little baby girl. She's 3 months old. She's, you know, I FaceTime with them all the time. She is so beautiful. It would be hard for me to look at that little precious face through a fence, man. That'd be torture. Yeah. But I haven't seen him yet. I've seen him in the stands, like, way, you know, far away and wave to him. But I'm going to wait until hopefully after the game tomorrow. Hopefully everyone's happy and smiling. But,
well, listen. Best of luck to you. I appreciate you joining me. Go watch. I know you got to go watch film with the team, and thanks for being our guest.
All right. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Doug.
All right. Look, you're our most popular guest in the history of all ball. Nearly 400,000. I don't know if you know this. Seriously, nearly 400,000 downloads for your episode. So my episodes are usually 225, 250 a piece. So it pretty much means you should actually have the show, not me. That's really what happens. Okay, let's get to the late game last night. That's what everybody's talking about.
Yep.
Just as a coach, okay, what'd you think? What did UCLA do in your mind, other than make shots to keep themselves close?
So that was a Jeff Van Gundy game. Not a lot of ball reversal. Because you get a chance to have less turnovers. Mick controlled the game with the offense. and he bet on his pace of play. Even though it was a high scoring game because it was overtime, Mick was a genius last night on the offensive end.
Before you keep going, okay, so this is just so you know, we haven't spoken. Yep. We haven't spoken. But and I did talk to Mike Lewis, and I had him on the pod, but not everything he shared with me is shared on the pod. But I said, but we were talking about it, and I said, look, I think the way to win this thing is you have to be able to use your offense as your defense. Now, that to me, it didn't mean that the lack of ball reversal. It was more like you have to pay attention to find ways to score because, and granted, this is what lost in the game, but when you score, it's much easier to set up whatever you're doing defensively, right? And so that was my thought to him was like, everybody focuses on, well, your like offense is unbelievable. How can we score? Because if we want to press the slow down, we have to score. We want to build a wall, better if we score, right? Everything we want to do comes down to offense. So when you say it's a Jeff Van Gundy game, if I'm listening to this pod, I'm driving to work on a Monday morning, what does that mean? What did he do in order to control the game with his offense?
The ball wasn't in, like, I've been on these Zooms with Jeff Van Gundy. A lot of my offense and my weakness of my offense were, you know, not the weakness, but everybody can touch the ball. That's not, I've developed later as I get older as a coach, you're 4 and 5 men. Sometimes you don't want to have the ball on the perimeter. You want to have the best ball handler. And the more we reverse it is the more chance we have live ball turnovers. He really spaced Gonzaga out and he went to mismatches. I mean, if I watched the last 10 minutes today again, just because I was so fascinated with it. Mm-hmm. And really, Mick deserves a lot of credit because no one managed the game against Gonzaga in maybe 2 years the way Mick did. I mean, and here's what he did too. And a lot of people get misconstrued with this because the game's going to have to evolve again. Everyone's focused on the three of the layup. And Mick said, you know what? We got to make the 17 footer today. And he has the players to do it. And he has the talent to do it. And it's something to think about in recruiting because nobody wants to do it. So why not recruit to it? Because it's the shot you can get. Every
position. You know, it's interesting. You know, it's interesting. So when you and I spoke last time, again, on an award-winning all ball that everybody else, if you're downloading this, you haven't known that was found. Anyway, we talked a little about Philly, and what I was thinking of with his team was something Phil Martelli told me. So when I was interviewing for jobs a couple years ago, Phil said, he was advising me on who I should hire. And I said, look, Ben, I got to hire somebody who knows what the hell they're doing. He gave me a list. He's like, you need to hire Paul. Paul Hewitt. Like, Paul's brilliant, done it, seen it. He kind of goes through stuff. And I said, yeah. I said, okay, but, you know, I think my vision of you get a job is all those guys are in the portal and you call them in and go, look, I will find you another school, but I want you to work with me in the spring and in the summer and we'll find you another school if you don't like it, right? And he's like, that's a great idea. He's like, but listen, he said, here's what I want you to think about if you get a job. He's like, look, you're going to want to put in your offense in the spring. He's like, everybody wants to put in their new offense. They're like, why? You're just going to annoy him. You're going to annoy yourself because by the time you come back in the fall, you're like, there's nothing new. There's nothing fresh. There's no additions to it. You're not winning any games in the spring anyway. He's like, you want to win games in the winter? Have him play one-on-one. Have him play extensive one-on-one. It's like end of the day, no matter what you draw up, you need somebody who can go get you a bucket, right? Plus, the players like it. You'll find out who's competitive in man-to-man defense. They get better at it in terms of getting their own shot. Anyway, I was thinking of that, and I was thinking of that's kind of what Mick's done here is, like, how many ball screens did they put Timmy in? 100, right? They want to attack him, which, by the way, attack him on defense. Only foul trouble hurt him. But just your conditioning and you're constantly playing defense, it's harder to play offense. It really is. Secondly, I thought like his guys just went and got buckets. Like, hey, I'm going to spread out, go get a bucket. And it was like the Phil Martelli thing, the aha light bulb. Like, that's what Phil Martelli was telling me to do if I get my own program. Not only get guys that can get their own buckets, but teach them how to keep improving at it, because that's how, as much as everybody thinks their offense, their spacing, everything wins games, it just comes down to guy has the ball. Can you go get me a bucket that wins me a game?
And what he did with, I mean, you're exactly right about the one-on-one, because I do it all the time now in the off season, but I wasn't a big believer. Like, oh, come on, let's run our offense.
Right.
In spring and summer, and I played for Coach Martelli. In the spring and summer, I think one-on-one is the best thing to do. And a guy in my league who's now at Providence, Bob Walsh, he's a great basketball mind. Bob,
yep,
told me one time, he said, you got to be playing one. I mean, he left the league. And I believe that Mick, in that game, he isolated two guys, maybe one or two guys, and said, look, we're going to have to take this and we're going to have to go at these guys. And I'm telling
Timmy?
You. What's that?
Timmy. And who's the other one?
A little bit. In an advantage was Kispert.
Yep. No, I mean, that's going to be the question for them next level. It's going to be the question for them tomorrow. Is can they guard? Right? Can they guard?
And that's why, like, I have Balor notes. You know, when I played Balor, I have notes and notes and notes about the game. And everyone's texting me last night, we gave Balor a better first half than the majority of these teams. And I laugh about it, but... And I really mean this. No one looks at the Iowa State game, because Iowa State was not that good. They didn't have a winning record. Iowa State won under all ball screens. It's fascinating to me.
Did they push up and body up and go under, or just yeah. old school?
No. It was a violent. You know, it's
that's Larry Eustacey. That's what Larry Eustacey used to do. And it's really, it's underrated how hard that is to shoot. Everybody says, well, you just shoot over it, right?
You're exactly
like you're shooting over your own teammate who's 6 feet eight. Like that's a bad shot.
It's a really, it's why I'm interested, so interested to see what the Zags do, because they know each other so well, Mark and Scott. But like, I think, you know, they're best friends. They, you know, they hang out all the time. They're good guys. I'm telling you, Iowa State's plan was the best plan of any team in the Big 12. Any team.
Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? It's like, and Steve is a friend of mine. I don't know if you know this. Steve was actually my host when I visited the University of Alabama. He was a manager. And it was a weird situation. They actually had him host me. And so I've known Steve, this is 1998, I went on a visit there, so I've known him that long. It is always interesting to me, like, when you have a curious mix of players, their best transfer wasn't eligible, you know, they had injuries, they had COVID shutdowns, right? And the fact is, like, you could make the case that he did his best job of coaching the year he got fired. But he got fired because they win games, but not because he didn't coach him, he just didn't have good enough players.
I texted the assistant. I don't know Steve at all, but I texted the assistant, Danielle Robinson. I just said, this may not mean much to you, but you guys had the best plan of any, because if they should have won the one game. And I'm anxious to see how Fuey guards it, because these guys on Balor, they're the real deal going north and south. And when they go small, I mean, it's going to be a shootout tomorrow.
Oh, no question. No question. Well, that's the thing that I do think, and look, I have this is nothing but respect for the announcers or whatever, but I do think that the way in which the game's covered, sometimes that those things aren't pointed out. You know, I love Raph, and Raph will mention it's going small, but they don't spend time to go like, look, here's the difference in the spacing. And, you know, Mark Vidal's a great rebounder, and now they never turn over. You know, they expose your weakest defender. You have to, everyone has the possibility of making a shot outside of Vital, who you have to pay. If you don't pay attention to him, he's going to get an offensive rebound. Like when they're small, they're deadly. I'm with you. I think, Gonzaga almost wants you to score quickly so they can get the ball, but they have a tendency at times to play defense only so that they can play offense, right? I'm with you. I think it's up and down.
So the other thing is if you watch the Iowa State, I watched 11 of the Big 12 games. Iowa State understood that Vital was the key. So they never went outside the lane to guard him. They had a spy, okay? And they literally spied the ball. It was the only team in the Big 12 I saw do this. This is why Iowa State was in the game. They let Vital do anything he wanted outside, and they clogged the paint. And it was just interesting to see because they didn't react. Ballard didn't react well to it in the game. And it'd be interesting to see if they guard Vital outside. Now, Vital, as a defender and a rebounder, by the way, this is the thing with Ballard, and you have to realize this. And we drilled this, and teams, Villanova got killed on it, and Houston got killed on it. When they offensive rebound, they do not look at the rim. I think they're 8th or 9th.
Throw it back up.
And they just catch it and throw it out. And it's a three. They
so do you practice that? Do you do that?
Do we do it offensively?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
First time I saw that.
Yep.
First time I saw that was I remember going to Davidson's practice. This is the year before they went to the Elite Eight. And so Steph was I guess, or maybe it was the year they went to Elite Eight. He was a sophomore. And they practiced daggers. They called it daggers in practice. And they would have all their bigs, and they throw it up, and they go get offensive boards. When they got an offensive board, there was Steph. But the entire team, anybody's in the perimeter, set their feet and get it and fire. And the team who used that actually was, I think it was 2012 or 2012 Duke, or it was 2010 Duke. Whatever Duke. Remember they added Zubek?
Yeah.
Right. And Zubek was the best offensive rebounder in the country, but he never went up with it. He simply turned. And when I coached in Israel, like in FIBA, there's only a 14 second reset. So we taught him like, hey, every time, same thing. Every time you get a rebound, you get an offensive rebound, you are supposed to shoot the three. And what happens is the whole team gets into it. Right. And so somebody, they don't have it till next pass and everybody's kind of hunting threes. But because the coach says like, hey, I want you, don't waste time. Take a three.
Yep.
It's an extra possession. Who cares? They like get into it and it becomes almost more than 3 points. And I noticed that Baylor does that. Like it's not just that they kick it out. It's that the guys are getting to their spots and setting their feet so that when they catch it, they're right up with it. There's no thought into, oh my God, I'm open. I'm just going to shoot it. And they're really, really good at it.
And look, we started to do it defensively. We do it defensively on a scramble drill where they rebound it. We got to scramble out. And what
do you do it?
So you do, you put three guys in the paint and you have an offensive, he rebounds it and you throw it out and they sprint. And now it's a 4-on-3 scramble drill, but we do it out of a rebound.
I like it. Yeah. I like it. That's
and
a great.
And then the other thing that came to mind is if you really look at Baylor, okay, they have the team that can score with Gonzaga in like they have the guards, they have the players, and now finally it looks like they're the pre-COVID Baylor. Like they're rolling now. So Gonzaga is getting a hot coming down at you Baylor team. They're coming north and south at you.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see also Gonzaga in terms of their conditioning. I, all basketball people understand it. I don't know if fans like, I had yesterday off. Like, yeah. Okay, dude, you just played 45 minutes at a level which is so high and so, and then the adrenaline of winning on the last second shot. You get in that locker room and now you're doing Zoom interviews with everybody. You go home and everybody's celebrating and now you got to sleep. You can't sleep and you get up the next day and you got to get ready for Baylor. Meanwhile, Baylor, that game was over at the half. And so they're watching and they click it off and they go to bed and they're still on a high from winning their game, but it's a little bit different. I'll be interested to see because Baylor, Gonzaga, 7 deep, whatever, but you know, conditioning is such a huge key there. I think for the national championship game, I know you'll be up for early in the game. I'll be interested to see middle of the second half what happens because I guarantee this game is going to be played at a high level and a fast pace. And you may end up running yourself out of the game by keeping up with Baylor. Here's a question for you. And we both agree Mick was masterful. I think he made a mistake in how he was trying to get Timmy out of the game. Because they just started posting. The reason they got behind in the overtime is one, Timmy's killing him. And then like in a post up, Riley. You know, nobody runs like cross screen, down screen anymore.
Nobody.
Right? No, but like literally zero people run pick the picker action or whatever. You know, Cooley runs, you know, little flex, but outside of that, nobody does it. Like, wouldn't you have cross-screened into it so Riley catches with an angle and now Timmy's coming from the weak side? Instead, he was just having him stand up at the block with his hand up. Like, that's not really how they play. I don't know. If it were you, and again, you have to have it in your playbook. If you're you and you have Drew Timmy and he's got 4 personal fouls, how do you attack
him? Well, one of the things I thought Riley, he missed that one layup. Oh my God. If he makes that,
oh, yes.
That to me. So I think Mick put it in his hands in a couple situations that were really good. What I think is the reality is Mick knows Riley. And I think he was trying to get the pick and roll to a, you know, a throwback or something quick to a post up. And sometimes it just wasn't there. But I will say this, like just talking about Mick for a second, like they lost 4 in a row going into the tournament. The energy now around UCLA, like, I mean, I know Ben Hallen went to 3 straight Final Fours and he had it rolling, but like, you got to give Mick some credit. The energy that you feel about UCLA basketball right now because of that game, it's a credit to him.
I agree. I guess the question for them is they signed a couple of very good players. I don't know if Ju Zhang puts his name in. Probably does, right? I mean, he played out of his mind. But it's I guess, and this is maybe a question for that we talked about last time, but, you know, Jay Wright has struggled with the first time they went to the Final Four is how do you – that team was tight. Right. That when I say tight, I don't mean nervous. Like they were connected, really, really connected. And part of it is though, like most of those dudes, like I love, Jacques, right? Everybody, like kid can play, but he's not going to be a pro. It's actually one of the things that I told those guys when they got the job. They're like, well, tell me about Jacques. I was like, I love him. Tell me about Kyman. I love him. Tell me about Singleton. He's okay. You know, but I'll tell you this, I'm not going pro on you. Those are 4 and 5 year kids. So, but how do you sprinkle in young talent with a group who, like, they won because of their toughness and their connectivity more so than their ceiling of talent? Now, these are first world problems, but they are problems that everyone who's gone to a Final Four and then starts recruiting at a higher level has experienced.
Doug, it's such a fascinating thing for that level. You just said it is, I think, if you look at, you know, Duke and Kentucky this year, the issue that they have is, you know, with COVID, lack of summer, lack of continuity. When you take those one and done guys, it's hard. It's really, really hard. The older guys that have been around win. And I think even for Porter, now that he got Oklahoma, Porter's got to make a decision on, you know, the one and done versus the 4 year guys. And I think Mick made a good decision. Like I agree with you. Probably one guy on UCLA's declaring, right? One. The rest of them, they can build some continuity. The other thing is, and it played itself out, is the Pac-12 didn't get enough credit. It just didn't get enough credit. And I think that's the statement of the tournament is, dude, the Pac-12, I mean, Oregon State gets to a Great Eight. Colorado won, you know, was the best, had the best record. If you look at it, the Pac-12 was really underrated.
I would agree. Let's go to that aside. What do you think of Porter at Oklahoma? Does that work?
Tremendous. I'm really excited. He'll be a great fit. He has the, you know, he's a great follower of Lon Kruger. He's very similar to him. Great basketball coach, great details, phenomenal evaluator of talent. He's going to get a great staff. He's going to get guys that to really, he's going to fall in love with Oklahoma. Oklahoma's going to fall in love with him. He's going to be a great fit there.
I thought how Baylor played against Houston is how you have to play against how Loyola played defensively, right? If you're going to put two on the ball and put one in the lane, you got to hit that skip to the weak side corner. They did the first half. They got jumper after jumper after jumper. And then maybe the more impressive part was in the second half, Houston started kind of cheating towards the skip, and they started hitting the roll guys, short rolls and traditional rolls as well. Like, one, Scott impressed me with their prep, but the players impressed me with their patience and execute. Like Coach said, hey, Coach said, keep that dribble. Don't pick up the dribble. Look to the weak side. And they did. Like, it's not like all you guys, it's not like you guys don't know what you're doing. It's not like you don't coach. It's a lot of times they don't listen. Well, they don't listen. And the good coaches find a way to get the players to listen. The great coaches get them to listen and then get players that are good enough to make shots. Right? That's really how it works.
It's the John Wooden line, right? It's the one coach says he taught it and the other said the players learned it. And guess what? Scott Drew players, they learned it. And, you know, it's what I say to my staff all the time. Like, hey, guys, we taught it. Did they learn it?
That's a great one. That's a great one. I like that one. I like that one a lot.
It's very true. You can really see the carryover with Scott's team. And look, we got Scott's team when we were up 14-13. They were not in the live game. I thought that they were like not hesitant, but like they weren't as confident. Now I watch the Wisconsin game. They're coming now. And you watch these last two games, it's like, whoa, man, this is going to be a heavyweight fight tomorrow. Because, you know, we have a line that says the team that blinks first loses. The team that blinks tomorrow night loses.
Ball goes in the basket, 3.7. Now, Nick didn't have a timeout call to set his defense. If you're in mixed position, do you call timeout? Are you a call timeout on a make guy?
No, but what we do drill this thing called cowboy. And the inbounders man, we drill this now.
You deny the ball?
No. We trap him. So you're going to throw back to the inbounder? Go ahead, throw it back. He's out of the play. It's really a 4-on-5 drill, okay?
Yep.
And you got to drill it. You have to sprint.
Yes. When I was at Notre Dame, this was like one of my I rest in peace to John McLeod. There was a lot of things that I didn't think fit with the college game and still teach the pro game. And I would turn to Franny and I was like, Franny, that shit ain't gonna work. He's like, you'd be all right. So but one of the things that was taught and drilled was they call it choking the point guard. So it was whoever man is taking the bounds, ball going to the basket, and he just denied the basketball to the point guard. Because the point guard is building back and then coming back up, right? We were drilled on 3 and 2, right? We're sending 2 back. So you get to midcourt, bring everybody back, and then when the ball goes in the basket, now you're building up. But I wonder if, and it's really hard, right? Yeah, no timeouts. You're on the fly, but it is everything you drilled. And literally nobody picked him up. He got 3 dribbles unmolested till he gets 30 feet to the basket. And granted, it's a miracle shot hitting a banker. Okay, I've lost once on a banker from that same spot. Like, it sucks because you don't feel like it's like a legit Chris Tinker jump shot. But I mean, if somebody makes him just hesitate for a second, he doesn't get cross half court, right? And I do think that that's one thing that you can draw. So you trap it, right? Now, what if he gets it? Like, one thing about Jalen was smartly, he got it going down the court. That's a hard one to stop.
It's a hard – guess what? It's easier said than done what I'm saying right now, okay? And
Mark, from our couch, it's amazing. Like, stop the ball!
Exactly. Here's the other thing is in a spot like that, you're told not to foul. So those kids are right. Just like this. You know, hands right. Up, stay away. And look, he hits a half-court shot. And when the ball went up, you know, I was, you know, watching it, and I'm thinking to myself when it went up, like, he's got a good shot at this. And when it banked, you're like, oh, my gosh. The only thing that you think about in a spot like that is, like, and I thought about this after the game, UCLA beats every team in the country except Gonzaga. I mean, it's the only team that day that gets away with a win. And that's how good Gonzaga is.
I agree with you. Here's what's interesting, though. We do this, like, oh, my God, the greatest game I've ever seen. Like, wait. I was there in Minneapolis. Texas Tech went overtime. Granted, didn't end that way. Went overtime with Virginia. I mean, Virginia, every game was the same. Every game was crazy. They were beaten. The semifinal, they're playing Auburn. He misses the shot. The game's over. They're like, no, we got a foul. You're like, what? And then they're like, oh, I guess he did run under him. This just happened the last Final Four. So if I was going to ask you, we're about the same age, okay? The best Final Four games you can remember off the top of your head.
The Jenkins shot is still, to me, you know, because it was the title game.
Yes. And it was at the buzzer. And it was – here's my thing. It was – first of all, people forget Marcus Paige hit that crazy double clutch shot, right?
Crazy.
Crazy shot. Like, couldn't make it one more time in 100. He makes it. So they call timeout. Now, Jay goes into his thing. I actually think it's even better that it was called timeout, even though I don't love timeouts there, just because it gave Roy a chance to set his defense, and everybody knew what was coming, right? They only run one play, and Roy, I thought he screwed it up. I know he just retired. I know he's a great coach, but he put Bryce Johnson underneath the rim, to guard the rim. And guess whose man is the trail man? Bryce, right? So if you watch, like, he's telling him, get under the rim, guard the rim, so no layups. And meanwhile, his guy comes trailing down and hits an open three. But yes, that was, I mean, to hit it as the buzzer expires in an absolute, and that was a great game with two great teams, and the shot making was a lot like last night. Like, that was remarkable. I'm with you. That's the best. That's the best one.
And then I think that game yesterday's too, but that one's the best. And the way both teams played, Carolina and Nova played, it was elite. Last night was elite. I mean, I think, you know, there's some games that are duds. You know, I remember the biggest dud championship game of all time was the one Maryland won. And that was an ugly game. I think it was Maryland, Indiana. And that was an ugly game, but, you know, they won it. But I think, you know, and then the Kemba, you know, Kemba's year was unbelievable. I mean, UConn, I mean, it's hard to believe UConn won four titles in like 20 years.
It's crazy, right? I mean that is insane. That is an insane stat.
Think about it. Insane. Like, people don't even realize, look, it's 30 minutes from me, but Danny is doing an unbelievable job. Calhoun did it. It's a farm. It's a farm.
Yeah, I don't know if I told you this. So my mom grew up in Bridgeport, right? She went to Syracuse. And when UConn was recruiting me when I was in high school,
yeah. She
was like, Stores? I go, yeah. She's like, you want to go cow tip? I go, what do you mean? She's like, it's like a Votech. Like, she looked down her Syracuse snobbery. She looked down, and that's not how she wrote, but she looked down on anybody in the state of UConn when he got there. I mean, it was like might as well have been a JUCO, right? And they became a juggernaut. And by the way, his best teams didn't win the national title, right? The team with Ray Allen and Deron Sheffer, that and Travis Knight, in 96. That was unbelievable. And he had other teams in the early 90s that were unbelievable teams that didn't win it. And then he had teams that got hot.
The irony in this Final Four, the two greatest rebuild jobs in the history of college basketball. One, Jim Calhoun. Two, Scott Drew. It's not even. And listen, if Scott wins tomorrow, you could argue that he's up there. But I mean, Coach Calhoun has four. Four.
Four titles.
I should say three. Three.
No,
three,
no, he has Kevin his three. Kevin has one, but I mean, yeah. Come on. I like Kevin, but come on.
Well, I would argue. Okay. Let me just say this, because I'm a Kevin fan, and I'm a UConn fan. Kevin did a great job in that NCAA tournament.
I agree. The things that derailed Kevin, I don't believe were coaching. Pure X and O related.
I'm going to say this though, and this is my argument about UConn, right? If Kevin was still in the Big East, he could possibly still be there. When you go from UConn to the American, you have no affiliation.
It's a great point you make. It's not said enough by people like you, because all the coaches, Boeheim will say it. But here's the reality. Syracuse, since being in the ACC, everybody's like, wow, you know, they got into the Final Four and they made a run this year. Go look at their conference record. It's not very good. Okay. It's not very good. Like, they were perfect for the Big East. And oh yeah, by the way, you're going to draw better because you're playing rivals. Also teams in great closer proximity. Like, if you play Georgetown and Villanova and UConn on a yearly basis in Syracuse, people show up just because, like, yeah, well, doesn't matter. Georgetown's good. We want to go kick Georgetown's ass, right? That's what, and I, you know, like, as opposed to playing Miami. I mean, it's just, sorry. It's, and I know Miami was in the Big East or whatever, or Florida State. I mean, how good Florida State is. I'm not going to see Florida State play where Georgetown, Syracuse, that sounds like a college basketball game I want to see. And that's not the only one. Look at the entire Big East that left the Big East. Villanova stayed. They dominated the league and they weren't dominant before they left, right? You put Syracuse right back. They're not losing two games in conference. It's just, it's completely Wichita State. Wichita State leaves the Valley and they have immediate success in the American. And then now they're struggling a little bit and they're a little different. Like, okay, so you're going to go watch them play Central Florida? Like, or would you rather watch them go play, you know, Evansville and the programs that they play and Drake? Like, those are close proximity rivals.
It is. And Fran Dunphy has a great line. He says, like, we have these economic problems and you have baseball teams, you have soccer teams, you have volleyball teams, you have softball teams. They're flying all over to play these games. You have to regionalize the other. I mean, you have to reach it. We're going to
be Olympic sports. Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to have to regionalize. And he used to say, or he still says, if I was, you know, commissioner of the NCAA, I would just make these, like, why is certain baseball teams flying? Do you understand how much money that costs? It doesn't make any sense.
There's also, and some of them have to bust, and there's like just a safety issue to it, right? I mean, just why would you, and they miss class. It's the whole thing is crazy. And it's like, oh, for football, and like, all right, your football, like, you know, I'm with you on it.
If you look at the Big East teams that left the Big East and went to the ACC, Boston College has never recovered.
Pittsburgh
hasn't recovered. I mean,
Pittsburgh had, now I know they changed coaches twice, but even though they played kind of boring style, and that place is not like the most dynamic place in terms, because the one side of stands is like it's got club level seating right there on the court level, which is kind of weird. But the Oakland Zoo's a good, but they had a great home record, great in the Big East because they're playing like talented foes, right? And they could recruit. Now they can't recruit New York nearly as easily. And he's got good players. It's just hard when now you got to play Carolina. You got to play Duke, you got to play, you know, Louisville, you got to play all these, and they're not proximity rivals, and it's a frankly, a higher level of competition at the top of the league. Roy Williams retires. As a coach, when I say Roy Williams, what do you think of?
Class guy. Class individual. I know him a little bit, but just always very professional, always, thoughtful. He always has a kind word to say. Just a gentleman, a real gentleman.
I thought the thing about them that was look, they always play fast, right? Like guys, it's already unfair when you have like the Argyle and the Carolina Blue and the Jordan Brent, and then they play like a fun style. They really, no one transitions like they do. I don't think he was the perfect game coach, but nobody's perfect, right? There's no perfect coach. Yeah. I thought some of the game, and matter of fact, his best teams often he didn't have as deep a bench. And he couldn't get himself in trouble subbing too much. And I do think that system they sub.
Well, you bring up a good point. There's only one team in college basketball that is the fastest playing team and the most efficient. Everybody else that tries to play really fast is not efficient. It's Gonzaga. The efficiency drops hard with everybody else other than Gonzaga. And that is a credit to Fuey and just the way he teaches offense. Because it's shocking every year that Gonzaga can be the only team. Everybody else that plays that fast can't be efficient.
Do you think it's because of level of competition? They're also very talented. But
Here's the funny thing. I don't think it has anything to do with competition. I just think he's got pros every year now. Gonzaga has pros. And like I said this
to David, what if David recruited the best guys and then fought Goliath? Right? That's kind of what it was.
It's like this. And I found myself, this is a secret, so don't tell anybody. Last night, I was in my, for 20 years, I rooted for Gonzaga in that UCLA game. Last night, they were UCLA. And they were, UCLA was Gonzaga. So
that's a good point.
Like, I'm rooting for Mick and in my mind. And I love Fuey. And I talked to Fuey. And Mick, we made the tournament. Mick sent me a picture of myself, right? I was on CBS Sports. And he put a cigar in my mouth, okay? He drew a cigar. Both guys are friends of mine. I was in my, don't tell anybody now. I was rooting for UCLA, and they're the top. It's because in my mind, I couldn't grasp that Gonzaga's become UCLA, and it's like it's the opposite.
Last thing before we get to previewing the game and picking some of the game, the portal. How many kids do you have in the portal?
One. He's okay. A walk-on.
No way! Did he do it as a goof, or did
he wants to go play Division II somewhere?
That's fine. Right?
Yeah. No. I look. We the problem with the neighborhood, and we say the neighborhood. It really is. Nobody's gonna leave. Like if you do it and you have so much fun and love, I may have guys conversations in the next 2 weeks where I say, dude, you may not play next year, and they may go in. But it's not anybody I'm begging. I have my whole roster coming back.
Okay, so now are you recruiting from the portal?
Yes.
Okay, so everybody's recruiting the portal, right? And it's not even a guilty pleasure. You can't recruit. You can't see kids play, right?
I mean, but if you're not recruiting in the portal, what are you doing right now? We gave our guys 2 weeks off. We'll start lifting this week, but what do you got to be? We're in the portal. I have one assistant. He's hitting the enter button.
refresh. Okay, so kid pops up in the portal and ooh. Okay, so how do you determine if you have a shot?
You got to get somebody around them. There's kids in the portal that we've tried at that I have good relationship with people, and they're high major players. See, we've revitalized two players. Malik Ellison was at Pittsburgh, came to us, was first team all-league.
I know.
Yeah. Tracy Carter transferred to us, was the best defensive player in our league. We've revitalized two guys' careers. So we're trying to make a name for ourselves on it. But at the end of the day, when you have high major players that haven't been humbled, meaning they're totally not flat on their back, they wouldn't be good for me. Because I need people that really want to understand what humility is. And if you don't have humility, you can't play it hard.
Do you also do the 6 degrees of Philly? Like, wait. He's not from Philly, but he played for a guy who I know. So let me call him, connect. Like, you go through the Philly thing, right?
Oh, my God. I mean, I'm not allowed to tell you. I got a commitment. We're not allowed to name the name, but I got a commitment through that.
Okay, so without saying names, okay, so how does it work? Kid pop, this kid, name pops up in the portal. Did you see it or your assistant see it?
Oh, I saw it.
Okay, so you saw it, and what was the first thing you did?
I called AAU coach. He's in the portal. Do we have a shot? You know?
And then what is that?
We're competing against North Texas and St. Bonaventure's.
Okay. And both off outstanding years and really good coaches, right? And, I mean, North Texas, nice spot. I think Hartford, I personally love Hartford in the Farmington Valley. Definitely better than St. Bonaventure, unless the kid has something for Olean, right? Okay. So you talk to the AU coach. He says, you have a shot, or he says, I don't know. You know, he really wants.
Well, my best players was his AAU teammate.
Okay.
So we were, we dove in and we got it done.
How long did this process take?
8 days.
Okay. I've heard some of the Sims like, look, man, you basically got like 36, 48 hours to make a call.
Dude,
if you want to
put it this way, if you go in and you're not on the phone with the kid, it's like.
But then sometimes you get on the phone with the kid, you're like, what if I don't want him? Or you haven't done enough. Like, you got to get it started quickly. Otherwise, everybody else gets in.
I mean, I watched every possession the kid ever played, and I was salivating. Like, you know, when I salivate, I don't stop. Like, my staff, like, we got to get, like, I'm nuts about it.
No, yeah, I think people are fascinated by the process. I really do.
Well, if you're not going to do, like, if you, like, I heard somebody say, like, I'm going to stay away from the portal. If you stay away from the portal, you may not be able to recruit. Like, you can't say that. You have to be versatile. Like, look at Kentucky. They just got a great player. A great player. The kid from from Davidson.
Oh, that's right. No, he's very good. Huh. He's very good. Yeah, people thought he's been the next Steph. You know, that's a hard burden to carry. But that's where you feel bad for Davidson, right? Like, you're like, man. You know, you pour a couple years into the kid. You recruit the kid. You build the program around the kid. And then he's got 1 year left. He's like, hey, I'm going to go play Kentucky.
Dude, it's the worst nightmare for like, and that's why.
I mean, so think about it. So if at your level, if you're good, if you have a really good player and you help him and he gets better, he's either going to leave and try and go pro or leave and go to a different program. If you're bad, you get fired. They all want to leave, or they all want to leave because they think somebody else is the reason that they're bad. I mean, it's like a no win. Like, I guarantee, I don't know if UCLA might have somebody go in the portal. Like, you know, I don't know, you recruited over me, whatever. I mean, it's like a no win thing. But I think the hardest ones are the low majors, especially, right? You take a kid, you know, maybe he redshirts early and he, by his senior year, after his junior year, he's a stud. And you're like, all right, he's come back. He's an all league player. You got an all-league point guard. It's like, yeah, I'm going to go to a better school. I don't even know what you do with that.
It brings your – so I'm going to veer off here and tell you that this is – Porter Moser takes Oklahoma. How many teams are in the Big 12?
10.
Now think about this. How many teams are in the Big East? 11.
11.
Yep. How many teams are in the ACC?
14.
14. How many teams are in Atlantic 10?
14.
14. So you, now here's my argument. This is my biggest argument with when coaching big jobs. Don't go to a league with 14 teams. Ready?
You finish last, meaning you're buried.
How do you get, like, these jobs in these leagues are so hard. The Atlantic 10 is a hard league. It's like, I could argue, we could have a debate. If Davidson stayed in the Southern Conference, what would have happened? I'm throwing this out there.
I agree. Davidson should not have. I mean, like, look, Butler's going through it right now. Like, why do you think, like, people forget that when Brad was there, okay, this is Brad Stevens, arguably, I mean, we can go to blows of her. You could have argued with the greatest college basketball coach there has ever been, considering the first national championship game, he had two great players, but still, second, he didn't have great players. I got the best gentle game. And it was ugly, but hell, they won. I mean, Matt Howard was his best player. He's like a 6'6" post anyway. But like, look at them in the Big East now. They have a tremendous coach. They recruit good kids, right? But it's really hard to, when you're built for a certain level of student athlete, to go and recruit against, you know, Villanova
at the end of the day, it's still a good league because there's only 11 teams. My argument is, when you're in a league with 14 teams,
yes,
it's just painful. It's like,
no, I remember when I was at Notre Dame, we finished tied for last, Big East. First year they had 14 teams. We're like, holy shit, there's a lot of teams above us.
And think about that. Like, when Porter, Big 12. Right, they only have 10 teams. 7 got in this year. 7 of the 10. It is a great league. Is the more bit, like, I had this debate with him the other, you know, 2 weeks ago. He's like, should I stay at Loyola? Should I stay?
And I was like, why don't you have him call me? No.
Yeah, I know. No. How about this? I said, don't, you can stay, but you're not allowed to complain anymore about only getting one bid.
Okay. There you go.
So the reason you go Oklahoma, you have a 70% chance to get into the NCAA tournament. Think about that. The Atlantic 10, you're getting 2 teams, maybe 3 out of 14. I'm not good at the percentages, but that's not good.
That's a great point. Look, I think the Oklahoma job is a sneaky great job. Sneaky great job. Now, there's only one downside.
Give it to me. There is? I don't know.
People don't really care. People don't really care. They don't really care. You know, they'll show up for the big games. And if your ego is, hey, I want a full house, I want the real college basketball feel. It was never great. And then the Thunder, although the Thunder are down now, but the Thunder have taken, you know, Norman is 20 minutes south of Oklahoma City, and you're going to go see the NBA, or you're going to watch the Big 12 on TV. The arena is not great, but they got a brand new facility. He has in the conversation the best athletic director in the country. I mean, yep. Joe Castiglione is amazing. Amazing. You can recruit Dallas. You can, the best kids in Oklahoma generally don't go to Oklahoma State. Some exceptions. Generally they go to Oklahoma, and you can get a kid or two out of Dallas, kid or two out of Houston. You can also, football helps you recruit. Anybody with a big time athlete's like, hey, I want to come on a visit. All right, come when we play, you know, OSU, or come when we play somebody big, Notre Dame in football. And you come, they're like, I'm in.
See, I'm going to say this, but his personality will really resonate. He'll get the fans. Like, they were selling out every game at Loyola. Think about that. They had no fan. They were selling out every game. He will be one of those guys in the community that gets people fired up to come see the basketball team.
I'm all for it. I'm telling the reality of it. Like,
I don't know the job.
No, but Stillwater's a harder job because it's a smaller town that's further away. But I mean, everybody loves Mike, and he got an extension, and they're struggling to fill that place, and that's a bigger place, whatever. I think Oklahoma is a great. That's why they've actually had go through their coaches. They've all have been incredibly. Even Jeff, who it ended messy at the end, they were great. They had incredible success with Blake Griffin, and then what derailed Jeff is the same thing we're talking about, where he took a couple of turds that were McDonald's All-Americans, and the kids ruined the program. Like, that's what brought down Jeff. It wasn't that they couldn't get kids. It wasn't that they couldn't win games. He did both. Kelvin got to a Final Four. Billy Tubbs got to a Final Four. And Lon Kruger got to a Final Four. Those are all the coaches that are coaching Oklahoma, right? John McLeod parlayed to an NBA job. It's a sneaky, great job. Not a good job, a great job. And because of the Thunder, the state of Oklahoma is producing more players than they used to. All of those things. And Dallas just got dudes for days. You know, you just gotta hire the right staff and get in there. And I think that's a great job. I think it's an amazing job. If Mike Woodson were to call you, he says, John, I've been doing the pro thing. This is a new thing to me. Now he's at Indiana, which, I mean, that's an amazing job, amazing opportunity. And I do love that people will say, like, you don't want to go there. They have crazy expectations. You tell me a place that doesn't have crazy expectations first. To your point about the 12 teams, how many did the Big Ten get? 9 this year? Or close to, or something like that?
9, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so they have 14 teams, but it's a different, like, you finish top half of the league, you're getting in.
That's it.
Right. And then you're Indiana, right? Like, you're not coaching unless you're a competitor, and you're not coaching at a high level unless you think, yeah, I can win. Tell me something that you can't win. But if it's you, he's asking you, and now you're a very different personality from Woody. What would your advice be for
him? I love Woody. I've golfed with him. Great guy. I'd be very frank with you. Like, for me, is my advice for him is, you know, get an Indiana, like, Indiana's different. Like, I didn't like Indiana for Porter for this reason. The fan base gets in the way a lot of things. And I don't mean this in a negative way, but I'm saying this. The fan base, can affect recruiting at Indiana more than any other place, because when it affects recruiting, it affects your livelihood. Oklahoma fan base is off the charts excited about Porter. Indiana wanted an Indiana guy, and they got it. And Woody's a great coach. He's going to bring a lot. He's going to have to bring a staff of, you know, Midwest Indiana recruit, and he will. And I think he'll make a great, he'll do a great job there. He's got a lot of good stuff.
Are you somebody who believes in hiring somebody who brings a player? Or like, what's your prerequisite for hiring an assistant coach? Like, I'll hire you, but you got to bring me a player. You know,
I think it's more than a player. I think it's a network. The guy's got to be in a network, and the network can't bring one player. It's got to bring a bunch of players. And then you want a coach. He's got to love the game. You know, just the passion of the game. And you have to have balance on your staff. You got to have, everyone has strengths and weaknesses. You just have to make sure that the strengths and weaknesses match up with each other.
Okay, let's get back to the championship game. Okay, yep. So you would tell, if you were to ask you, or if you asked you, watch your film, they'd say, let's push up and go under. Do you think that's what Gonzaga does on ball screens?
See, I think this, you're going to laugh. I think Gonzaga has been studying Balor for a year. For 1 year. That's how I think they've been.
Well, on this pod, just so you know, I recorded Roger Powell, who's the assistant. He's been there for 2 years, and he doesn't have the scout, but he's like, yeah, we were prepared for them at the summer.
Look, I know Tommy.
To what you say, yeah, yeah.
I know Tommy Lloyd. I know Mark Few. They were probably doing drills. I'm not kidding you. Preparing for the ice ball screen with Balor, because Balor ices you. And They've been doing drills, and I'm telling you, that's the advantage. If you said to me right now, why Gonzaga? Well, the Zags have been preparing for Balor for this and this moment for 2 years. For 2 years.
So ice ball screens on the side.
Yep.
You short. Are you short roll and hit the short roller?
They're going to hit the short roller. Back to,
yeah. And they're then look weak. Or now
you
then just
you
attacks?
Could bring. We have a whole drill we do with it. You could throw back and come right back into a dribble handoff. That kills people. That kills people. So you could do a bunch of different things off of it. I just can tell you that Gonzaga, whatever they're going to do, they've been drilling it for a year now.
So you had to prepare for them icing ball screens. You had to decide how you're guarding their ball screens.
Yep.
What else do you have to do to prepare for Baylor?
Timmy's gonna get a double team coming from the baseline side. Mm-hmm. So the double's gonna come from the baseline side. Now, a lot of people, like you talk about, they're not gonna talk about this in the game. But the baseline side double, because the top, he's gonna come up on the top side and the double's gonna come, and it's a hard thing. Ballard does a great job on the post double, and it's gonna happen early.
But where does it come from? With their spacing and they're playing four out, it feels like it's a long run to get to that double.
It's going to be a long run, but they're going to anticipate it. Balor's going to anticipate it. They're going to come, and it's going to come quick. I've watched the tapes on it. Now, look, the teams in the Big 12 are really, really talented. They're not as good as Gonzaga offensively. So it's going to be interesting to see. One of the keys to the game is who wins that battle in the double. Does Gonzaga exploit the double?
Okay, so if you're telling Timmy, how do you teach somebody to play out of the post double? Okay, because I mean, you catch the ball and you're at the, you know, you get the ball at the left block. Okay, now he also likes to face up. That's one of the best things he does on that short roll. But we're talking at the post. He catches the baseline double, comes. What do you teach? You teach him to dribble out. Are you teaching him to? I've heard people go like, "Hey, if you get double, just shoot it." Now we got advantage on the weak side of rebounding. What are you teaching him to do?
We have a thing called Tyson Holyfield, okay, where you have to punch. You have to have a cutter punch the gap. So I'm imagining he's going to turn, and someone's punching the gap into the middle, hard cut, and then that sucks the defense down, and then you're skipping opposite, and then that's a dangerous. With Gonzaga, that's dangerous. But I would imagine. And that's what they're going to do. And then, like, the biggest shot of the game was one of the biggest shots of the game was Kispert's. They threw back for the three. Kispert's going to have to, he's going to have to be, because they're going to double. They're not going to sit and just let him go one on one on the post, in my opinion.
Okay. Who wins?
Ooh, I got I'm going on the Waco TV station. I mean, the Waco radio station tomorrow. I'm their good luck charm. Can you believe this? I've gone out each week, and they make me come back. So I am a huge Mark Few fan, and I love him, and I love Gonzaga. You know, my mother yelled at me.
Just pick the goddamn game.
You're right. Gonzaga 95, Balor 91.
That'll be fun.
Listen, the only thing that bums me out, I have my daughter and son that want to stay up and watch it. It's a 9 o'clock tip on the East Coast. What do I do? Let them stay up?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, of course you do. Like, yeah, and you know, you do is you turn off your damn phone and you just enjoy every moment of it with them, right? It's like so this is a true story. So my son is 12. So when he was 10 or we went to the last Final Four in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
And he went to the one in Arizona, and I was working for CBS at the time. It was great. He's been to Dallas, but I was doing the set of the Final Four, so I barely saw him. It sucked. And he was little. And then Arizona came with me. And that was great because I had a buddy who met us there. And whenever I was working, he took him, and they just had with a couple. He had his boys there too. Minnesota. So we go to the semifinals, and you know, like I've known Pearl forever, and these are all like Tony has been amazing to me. Pearl, who else? Beard and Sean Sutton's on the staff. Like, those are my guys. Who's the other team in the Final Four? I'm not forgetting. It's Virginia, Auburn, Texas Tech, and Michigan, right? Michigan was there. So, I'll never forget, like, before the Auburn game, right? Like, the Michigan game was the first game. He was tired. He was a little bored. And he took a nap in the chair, in the dome, in between games. And he's like, "Dad, I can't make it. Can we go back maybe to the dorm, maybe to the hotel? Can we maybe watch on TV?" I was like, "Hayes, can you just trust me or something? Just watch this game a little bit." And the first half was a little boring, and he's still like, and I got him like a Coke and sugared him up. And like, he stayed for that and he was amazing. And then, so then Sunday we hung out, we just rode out. Monday I had to do a radio show and then I had the game. And he was kind of similarly like, he's like, a little fried. Man, it's a long game. It was again, late start, you know, like 9 o'clock. He's on East Coast time at the time. And I was like, just trust me on this one. And to this day, like if you ask him, like, what's the best thing you've ever done? He's like, I was tired for the national semifinal and I went and stayed up and it was amazing. Although I wanted to cry because Auburn, he thinks, was a bad call. And then the championship game. So, yeah, I mean, you know, and when the Patriots came back, it was, you know, they're down 28-3.
Yep.
So we were living in Connecticut at the time. And my kids, we made them go to sleep because they had school the next day. And I promised them, like, look, if it gets close, I'll wake you up. You know? And then all of a sudden, it was again, like, oh, my God! Oh, my God! My kids like, what happened? Nothing, I'll tell you in the morning, go back to bed. And like, I just felt so bad, I didn't wake them up. So the answer is, hey, come on, make a party of it. You get whatever your favorite treats are, right? You get some blankets out, you know?
I love it.
You watch the game.
It's going to be
the family business.
It is the family business. And you know what? It's going to be a classic. I mean, I'm just telling you, tomorrow night is going to be a classic.
All right. You're the best for staying up with us. This will drop in the morning. We'll see if we can get you 400,000 more.
If we get 400,000 more, we got to do like once a month.
No question. But shit, you'll get residuals. In the meantime, go back in the portal. Go get more players. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Doug.
You're the best.
See you, bud.
Okay, so there's your day of the national championship pod. And of course, if you go on over to BetRivers, BetRivers.com, you can throw some coin on it. They have all kinds of different games as well. You can figure out exactly what you want to do for tonight's game. I think it's a great game. I think the big challenge, and I actually forgot to ask Roger this, we're kind of limited on time. I think the big challenge is going to be that UCLA doesn't beat Gonzaga on Monday night. That was a game that went late in the night, the hard-fought game. They hadn't played an overtime game all year. They hadn't played a game like that. You're going to have the juice for the game, but to play at your absolute peak, that'll be hard considering Baylor, that game was over at the half. It really was. On the other hand, Gonzaga has now played in a close game. They've seen their own blood and they found a way to win a game. So look, I picked Gonzaga to start the year. I'm not as confident as I've been throughout parts of the season, but I'm still confident enough. They're a great team. And as good as Baylor is, I think Gonzaga just has more implied threats offensively, just more guys you expect to be able to score, which creates more space. And you give space to a guy like Jalen Suggs, and it's really hard to guard. So I'm going to take Gonzaga in a close game. Remember, you can download the daily podcast, the radio show podcast, and this is the radio show on Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app, wherever you download podcasts. Also on SiriusXM 217 and 203. Pick that one out. That's the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. In the meantime, make sure you download, you subscribe, you rate, and write a review as well. Hope you enjoyed this. Go back to our catalog. There are great All Balls. This was one of them. My thanks to Roger Powell. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Balls.